tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radio.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 15th of January, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, which means we will be talking about geopolitics today, and it means we have a special guest with us. We have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I had Marcel, my cat, 10-year-old with the huge bone tumor on his jaw, which no one could do anything about. But he's still a happy boy. He was right here, looking at the computer, and now he just got bored and left. So we almost had a guest on.
We almost had the cat walking across the keyboard and purring into the mic. So I guess we should be thankful for small mercies. Well, today,
yes, and that's what Stanley used to do. Well, that's how he became famous.
Right, I was probably getting the two mixed up there. I do remember Stanley. What's the name of this one?
Marcel.
I've heard you mention him as well. Well, today we're going to talk about the Iranian riots, protests they're being called over here. But if you look at them on the television, they look like riots to me, with things being set fire to. And we've got three articles that we're going to use. We have two from Press TV, and we have one from Global Research. And we'll start with the first Press TV one. Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi attributes recent foreign-backed riots in Iran to an Israeli plot aimed at escalating the situation and prompting fresh American aggression against the Islamic Republic. The top diplomat made the remarks in an exclusive interview with Fox News Special Report with Brett Baier on Wednesday. In response to extreme claims of high death toll in Iran, as propagated by American and Israeli media outlets, among others, Araghchi firmly stated that the number of fatalities was in fact in the hundreds. He explained that the violence was not a result of economic protests, but of external terrorist elements that infiltrated the demonstrations. These elements, he added, were responsible for escalating the situation by carrying out attacks against Iranian security forces and civilians. These terrorist cells entered the protests using Daesh-style terrorist operations. They shot at police officers, burned them alive, beheaded them, and targeted civilians, he stated. For 3 days, we were not fighting protesters, we were fighting terrorists. The official went on to assert that these rogue actors were deliberately trying to intensify the violence in order to provoke US military aggression. The aim, he noted, was to increase the number of casualties to try to justify foreign involvement in the unrest. They wanted to increase the number of deaths. Why? Because President Trump had previously stated that if there were killings, he would intervene. Their goal was to drag the United States into this conflict, Araghchi said. This was a deliberate Israeli plot. They sought to create more deaths by targeting ordinary people and police officers. He meanwhile reminded that the Islamic Republic was now in full control of the security situation in the country, referring to the outcome of security forces' successful confrontation against the riotous elements. Straight away, when I hear about a protest and then you start hearing about police being shot at the protest and you hear of civilians being shot at the protest by snipers, straight away I think of what happened in Syria, because that's exactly what happened in Syria probably about 15 years ago now with the protests there. And I think the same thing started happening in Libya And I think we had similar in Ukraine, even once they started protesting, the police yes. officers were attacked, wasn't it? I mean, it's a playbook that they just keep repeating, isn't it, Matt?
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. And it's a shame that it's the same pattern. They just fill in the blanks. And academics and journalists who are, of course, in on all this don't see the pattern. The economy is not nearly as bad as it's being reported, including inflation. You know, Iran is a first world country. Iran is better off than the U.S. in most indicators. You know, very little debt, you know, trade surplus, et cetera. And doesn't really trade with the U.S. So sanctioned, you know, under any circumstances. So trades mostly with China, India, Russia, a few other places. So I'm not saying the sanctions didn't have a role in this, but yeah, it was a protest. If anything, it started off, you know, against the West. I remember in Syria, when we first talked about this in 2011, the pro-Assad protests were 10 times the size of the anti-Assad ones, but that's been written totally out of history now. These were opposed, you know, they knew that the West was up to something, that this is not, you know, endogenous to the system. You had economic growth right up until right now. Inflation, I think, is at 40%. It's been an ongoing problem. Caused by a bunch of things. Iran is a very unique situation economically, but no different than, well, it's not that different than the U.S. today or the U.S. back in the Carter administration. Unemployment is fairly low. And, you know, I've been reading, you know, the Iranian news and what they're doing. You know, they're simply, you know, they have a huge sovereign wealth fund available. They're, as food prices go up, they're issuing vouchers. You know, they have the money. The Chinese, and if that runs out, they have the Chinese. So this whole thing is very artificial from the start. And as far as the protests are concerned, these were, of course, it's the same playbook. And there'd be no reason to start shooting over these issues. Unless, of course, you're working for someone else. These issues aren't dire enough to start shooting, and no one was prepared for it. The police weren't prepared for this, the violence and stuff is exaggerated, but the deaths really came from this sudden shooting from the protest side, and we know that Netanyahu and the U.S. they've been trying to infiltrate Iran for many years. You know, they have people there. You know, you can't deny Mossad is a tremendous, a great infiltrator. And it's pretty much over now, despite, you know, I mean, the U.S. always uses fake pictures and fake statistics. They do it all the time. Now, as far as dragging the U.S. into the conflict, I'm not sure that's a very good idea. I mean, President Trump may believe that he won that, you know, 12-day war. He didn't. He lost it. Israel was in ashes. At least its major institutions were. I don't know if he knows that or not. Maybe he's just not getting that information. So, and actually that's the issue we'll be reading about here in a little bit. But that's... you know, the U.S. is messing with a first world economy, which in many ways is healthier than its own. This is not, you know, a third world hellhole, as you would call it.
Well, the thing is, if you start shooting, if you've got snipers there and they start shooting at the police and they start shooting at the civilians think the police are shooting at them, and the police think the civilians are shooting at them. So it sows absolute chaos. I mean, that's the point of doing it. And this bit about coming in Daesh style, so, and then referring to beheadings, I haven't heard anything about that on the Western news. I mean, I've seen some images, which has been of things on fire, and there's been referring to the Iranian government, brutal repression of protesters, but nothing about beheadings and police officers being killed. I mean, perhaps that could be an exaggeration, but he's saying that they came in ISIS style, and then he's referring to beheadings. So it doesn't seem as if it's an exaggeration to me. It seems to be a point that he was quite keen to make. And again, that follows the American, Israel, EU playbook of sending jihadis into Syria and sending jihadis into Libya. So it really wouldn't surprise me if they were also sending in jihadis into Iran just to create chaos.
Yeah, if anyone would know how Daesh operates, or ISIS, it would be Iran. Because, you know, it is a Western creation. They go wherever the U.S. needs them. And the Islamic Republic has been fighting them for a long time. If anyone knows how they operate, it's their security services. And what you said about the shooting is absolutely correct.
Well, also, when you're referring there to Iran with ISIS, it's General Suleiman. He was the guy that was the big threat, the huge threat to ISIS. And, of course, America assassinated him. And he was a great hero, wasn't he, for fighting against ISIS?
Precisely. And that's any time the Russians would hit a real ISIS position in Syria, the U.S. would condemn them. And it got to the point where they weren't sharing coordinates anymore, because the U.S. were giving them fake ones. It was very obvious that the U.S. had created this group and helped finance them along with the Israelis. Because back then, you know, the Syrian army was a first-rate force. This doesn't come from nowhere, you know, but apparently this came. The only reason this would show up overnight is with a lot of Western support. But the shootings, yeah, it reminds me very much of Maidan. And it just, you can't imagine. I mean, your typical journalist has to know there's a connection. He's just not allowed to talk about it.
Well, we are allowed to talk about it, and we like to talk about it. We think it's important that we point these things out and that we convey the alternative viewpoint on these issues. Next, we have another article from Press TV. A senior advisor to the leader of the Islamic Revolution has warned that last June's missile strike on the United States military's Al Udeid air base in Qatar should serve as a reminder to President Donald Trump of Iran's resolve and capability to respond to any act of aggression. The president of the United States, who repeatedly brings up the futile attack on Iran's nuclear facilities, would do well to also mention the ploughing of the American Al Udeid base by Iranian missiles, Admiral Ali Shankani said in a post on Twitter on Wednesday. It would certainly help create a realistic understanding of Iran's determination and capability to respond to any aggression, added Shamkhani, who was injured when his residence was targeted by Israeli strikes during the 12-day aggression last year. His comments came shortly after US media reported that some personnel at Al Udeid had been advised to leave the base by Wednesday evening, and concerns that mounting tensions between Tehran and Washington could escalate into a military confrontation. Iran struck the Al Udeid base, the US military's largest in West Asia, with missiles last June, after the United States attacked Iranian nuclear facilities in support of the Israeli aggression against the Islamic Republic, which killed more than 1,000 people, including senior commanders and nuclear scientists. The Al Udeid base, located outside Doha, serves as the forward headquarters for US Central Command and directs American military operations across the region. In recent days, Trump has repeatedly threatened to launch another strike as deadly riots backed by Washington and Tel Aviv raged in several cities. Millions of Iranians marched nationwide on Monday to condemn the unrest and the destruction of public and private property, expressing support for the Islamic Republic. Calm returned to major cities following the rallies. On Tuesday, however, Trump urged rioters to seize state institutions, telling foreign-backed groups that help is on its way. Iranian officials have warned that US bases in the region will be targeted if Washington launches any attack. And I mean, I'm quite surprised that Iran attacked that U.S. base if it was just outside Doha, because that's in Qatar. I mean, wouldn't that mean that they were sort of declaring war against Qatar by attacking a base? Or would Qatar see it as well, that was an American base. It's not any offense to us that you attacked it. I mean, what happened there, Matt? Can you remind us?
Yeah, the U.S., you know, the U.S. has normalized terror against civilians. The Iranians, however, are doing the exact opposite. They're being very careful as to what they hit, whether it be in Israel. You know, it's very difficult for, even though there are different kinds of Islam, for any of the Gulf monarchies to side with the U.S. against another Islamic country. The American bases are extremely exposed. They have, now Iran, of course, has hypersonics from both Russia and China that the U.S. can do nothing about. The U.S. has a critical shortage of interceptor missiles anyway, and a critical shortage of crews and everything else. You know, these ships that they send, you know, they're 50% are not combat ready. They're just symbols. Iran, however, has been dug in and building and waiting for this for a very long time. They know exactly what they're doing. If Iran wanted to, they could wipe out the American military presence in the Middle East. And they haven't done it yet, but they could. And I think the U.S. High Command, maybe they would know this, maybe they don't, but there's an army of former military writers, you know, Scott Ritter and that type, who have said, you know, they could do it tomorrow if they want. But when Donald Trump says, you know, seize these institutions, overthrow this government, that's an act of war. And, you know, of course, the U.S. have been at war with Iran for a very long time, obviously. But saying something like that, stupidly, Iran has every right to hit, but they're very careful about who they go after. Strictly, you know, these sanctions mostly have affected civilians. But the Iranians are very careful. Whenever they attack a base, they've done it several times now. It's military. And same thing even with Israel. They raised that country to the ground in the 12th day. That's why Netanyahu banned any pictures or videos showing what happened. We don't know. I don't know if that's still in effect. Maybe it is. You can't show what the Iranians did. Some of it may have been rebuilt by now. I don't know. But they showed what they were capable of. The U.S. is extremely exposed. The Chinese are not going to stand for this. The Russians are opposed to this whole thing. And the snapbacks, oh, we'll talk about that in a little more. I don't want to get into it right now. But help is on the way. What in heaven's name does that mean? That's, again, another act of war. I always think that Donald Trump has a very naive view of the capabilities of the American military. And I've written, I may put a book out actually on the extreme limitations of the American military. That it's quite literally falling apart and being run by the wrong people because they're so overstretched, you know, bases everywhere. But I want to repeat, if Iran wants to, they could wipe out the entire American military presence in the Middle East with no problem. And most of their missiles would get through. This is what happens when you have an irrational foreign policy run by oligarchs, because so many of the patriots went to Ukraine, a ton of more when you went to Israel, and you have a ton more going to places like Taiwan. They're at a critical ammunition shortage in the entire West, not just the U.S. And they're well aware of this. And I think Trump just has a very, very naive view of what the military can do, which is why we talked about last week, he took the kidnapping route rather than a full military onslaught, which I don't think the U.S. would have won.
Well, it's interesting that he's urging them to take on the state institutions and saying that help is on the way. I mean, that's really blatant support for sedition. You would think that would sort of sound the death knell for any of these protests. If there's a, your foreign opposition in another country is saying they back the protests, surely it means that the general public are not going to back these protests because they know that it's going to be foreign subversion. And it gets even more blatant than that. This next article we have is from Global Research. There is something deeply disorienting about an intelligence service addressing a foreign population in the middle of live unrest in their own language, telling them to take to the streets and then casually implying that it is there on the streets among them. Mossad's recent message on Twitter does exactly that. It is chutzpah of an obscene order. And I did actually see this tweet as well. It passed through my Twitter feed. In late December 2025, as street protests were unfolding across Iran, Mossad posted a message in Farsi on its official account. The Jerusalem Post immediately amplified it, quoting its central lines, urging Iranians to go out together into the streets and asserting that Mossad agents were among you in the streets. And that must have been the tweet that I saw. It must have been from the Jerusalem Post, obviously, because I don't read Farsi. And I was just amazed at that when I saw that, that they were saying, effectively saying, the Mossad are there amongst you in these protests. Did you want to make a comment on that before I continue on this, Matt?
There's no institution less popular in Iran than Mossad. I'm not sure who would listen to them. Why would they? Who are they? This sounds more symbol than anything else. I suppose there's maybe a fifth column in the bureaucracy, and that's maybe. But who's taking orders from Mossad now? Why would they identify themselves and say, yeah, we're right there? Who in Iran supports the Jewish state, especially under these conditions, especially given the Gaza war and everything else? So this is absolutely, it's deeply disconcerting. That's an understatement.
Well, you would think that it would put the people that the protesters that were protesting, you put them at risk as well. You're effectively saying, well, they're all double agents, and then they're going to be at risk from, you know, just normal Iranian people. It is a very strange thing to do. Through the amplification, that's the amplification from the Jerusalem Post, the message acquired international reach and functioned as a deliberate act of psychological pressure on the Iranian state. The protests in Iran erupted amidst genuine economic problems. The rial had fallen to roughly 1.42 to 1.445 million per dollar. Inflation approached 42%, and basic necessities had moved beyond reach for large segments of the population. What began with shopkeepers shuttering stores in Tehran quickly spread nationwide. Into this volatile reality, an Israeli intelligence service, long practiced in the shadow theatre of security alerts and covert murderous actions, inserted itself as a public political actor. Such behaviour signals a shift in statecraft that demands a name. Do you want to comment on that, Matt?
I think it's very important to note that who in Iran would blame the government for the economic problems? I mean, there are economic problems, but given the sanctions and given the blockages and given the military attacks and everything else, they're going to blame the Iranian government for it? No, they blame the West for this. They're well aware of the sanctions placed on their economy. The state just issued its new budget. They have a lot of money to draw on, and they've simply increased its food coupons, its welfare system. So no one is starving here. Nothing is, and the author is wrong. It's not beyond the reach. It's not that bad. The U.S. probably has inflation maybe about 30% right now, or has been in the past, you know. So, and I love the concept. You know, a few authors have said it comes from, inflation comes from the over-reliance on oil, which is where the nuclear power issue came from. Had nothing to do with weapons. But what did Iran try to do with that? And murdering more economic scientists. The whole point of nuclear power was to slowly shift the society away from oil when it eventually runs out. Not to mention, and a handful of people have mentioned this, the water issue. some of their aquifers are drying up. The U.S. is using its influence in Iraq to shut off certain rivers and things. So they've gone to desalinization, all that kind of thing. But, you know, it's not as if inflation goes up and the government sits there. No, they're, again, this is not a third world country. They simply issued the proper coupons to make sure that everyone has what's necessary. My fear is that the black market, run by, you know, a very awful group of people, will then fill the gap. But, you know, you still have, within all this, you still have a certain economic growth according to the Central Bank of Iran. They still there, you know, you still have a growth rate of 4% last year. So, so this is a temporary matter. But Israel's concern has always been to take a country that is against Israel nearby, that either is first world or is becoming first world, and make sure it becomes third world again. This is an economic matter. The only reason the sanctions were put back onto Iran were because they're producing missiles that might be able to carry nuclear warheads. Well, they don't have a nuclear weapons program in Iran. There is no interest in that. That hasn't been the case in a long time. U.S. intelligence has been saying that for a long time. Donald Trump just dismisses it. The mere fact that they created a missile that could carry one, therefore, that was enough. Oh no! Now they're going back to the nuclear program again. That's the mentality in Washington. That's the mentality in the Trump administration. It's really it's quite childish.
Well, getting back to this bizarre behavior of announcing that a foreign intelligence agency is behind the unrest in the middle of the unrest, we'll get back to this article here. Such behavior signals a shift in statecraft that demands a name. Public intelligence messaging describes the new doctrine now on display. Public intelligence messaging. Under this model, an intelligence service abandons both diplomatic distance and covert restraint. It addresses a foreign population directly in its own language during live unrest while openly asserting its identity as a spy agency and even claiming physical proximity to demonstrators. As I say, I mean, surely that's going to put their allies and their informants at great risk. I mean, perhaps they haven't actually penetrated Iran, and that's why they're saying this. Perhaps they have a few snipers there that are just firing at the police and firing at the civilians, but they don't actually have that much penetration. So then if they were to then say, well, we're behind all this and we're there in amongst them, you know that that's going to cause the people that are involved in it, the genuine protesters, they're then going to be under suspicion, aren't they? So, I mean, that could be a reason for it.
Yeah.
You think?
That's exactly right. And then you have a massive group of counter protests condemning just this. Who in Iran can listen to Mossad of all institutions?
It is.
Who's going to tolerate the penetration of Mossad into their society of all people? They're the most hated group in that country. So there's something there's more going on here. I don't know who they're talking to. They would have to be very covert, not just come out with it. You know, unless, you know, are they talking about to their Jewish population there? The Jewish population there has been fairly satisfied. They're not against the state. They've been well treated. Who are they talking to? Are they doing what they did in Venezuela? Maybe bribing a few generals? Maybe that's who they're talking to. I don't know. But of all institutions, the last one that an Iranian can listen to is an Israeli. Is Mossad of all? It's mind blowing.
You're just going to be like guilty because you're having anything to do with these protesters. They're going to think that you're now part of Mossad because you were part of the protests. Psychological warfare moves from the back channel to the main stage. Long subjected to external pressure, most notably American sanctions, reimposed and intensified through the September 2025 UN snapback mechanism, and widely recognized as the primary driver of the currency crisis, and facing documented efforts at Israeli infiltration aimed at destabilizing the state, Iranian authorities recognized Mossad's unusually overt Farsi message for what it was: further confirmation of foreign incitement and active penetration. The result followed, predictably, mass arrests, sweeping internet restrictions, and violent crowd dispersals, precisely the outcome Mossad's intervention sought to provoke. The same dynamic unfolded in Venezuela. A bolivar that lost roughly 80% of its value in 2025, projected triple-digit inflation, and widening black market exchange gaps produced acute social hardship. Against that backdrop, President Maduro explicitly framed sectors of the opposition as vehicles of Zionist influence, alongside invoking US sanctions, alleged CIA drone strikes on Venezuelan territory, and public authorizations for US operations. Those claims supplied justification for military deployments, mass detentions of opposition figures, and systematic criminalization of dissent as foreign conspiracy, a near mirror of the script now playing out in Iran. Across both cases, the intervening power incurred no meaningful cost. The target society absorbed the damage, economically, politically, and in human lives. So it would seem that what they're saying, or what they're implying, is that the reason for this overt explanation, oh, Mossad are in there amongst them, is because they knew there would be this really harsh crackdown on the protesters, and they wanted that to be the casus belli for America to go in and attack Iran. So rather than them not actually having any penetration, it would seem that they, well, through their own allies and their own spies under the bus, so that they could try and get a huge crackdown on the civilians. Do you think that's what's going on, Matt?
Well, again, you know, when I read anyone from the press, and I trust this guy's, I disagree with a few things that he says here. The Maduro crackdown wasn't all that harsh. But, you know, you might have more support for Israel in Venezuela than you do in Iran. I can't even wrap my head around it. And the fact that Maduro, by the way, was so vehemently anti-Zionist is one of the reasons he's in New York today. But, you know, Iran does have legitimate economic problems, maybe not so bad as the U.S. does or Germany does, but they have many problems, including, you know, trying to get away from oil. And remember, you know, sanctions aren't, you know, the U.S. doesn't really have anything to do with Iran, never really did in terms of trade. It's mostly Chinese, Central Asia, the Middle East. But the U.S. then goes to, well, China wouldn't listen, Russia wouldn't listen. But the U.S. would then go to, say, the Gulf monarchies and say, if you trade with Iran today, you know, we're going to put sanctions on you. Pretty soon everyone gets sanctions. It's like Oprah. It's so absurd. Plus the fact that the Iranians are not nearly as subject to sanctions as the Venezuelans. I mean, they were very Venezuela. Most people in Latin America are very dependent on the American market. Iran never was. U.S. gets no oil from there. The EU does a little bit, but EU produces much of its own. Besides all that, though, any country, including the U.S., would have a right to crack down if that were the case. If a foreign intelligence agency said, yeah, this is what we're doing, they would have every right to crack down. That's what a state does. And I think that's exactly when the pro-government demonstrations, which were massive, came about. Because now this has gone too far. And if you're worried about the economy, you're not going to burn down the capital city and cause all this damage that now has to be paid for. Only certain antisocial elements can do that. So, but, you know, the concept that the U.S. has some influence in Iran is somewhat exaggerated. You might be right. You might be right. Maybe you know, the Iranian intelligence service is actually very advanced, just like everything else. But beyond that, you know, their resistance economy, as it's called, has been developing for a long time since the Clinton administration, and certainly since the Obama administration, building tie, you know, just like Russia's. So I don't know how much sanctions have to do with any of this. But the trick of saying, oh yeah, this is all Mossad, therefore you're going to round these people up. Well, if there's even a grain of truth to that, the state has to respond. It can't do anything, because I guarantee you most of the population would now oppose the state for not doing something. So what is wrong with a crackdown? If you have your foreign infiltration, then you have every reason. That's what the state is authorized to do, especially under these conditions.
The same pattern recurs across the region at scale, and Mossad's intervention in Iran exposes the governing logic behind it. Syria's 2011 uprising fell quickly under regional intelligence competition and proxy warfare, converting a popular revolt into a prolonged national catastrophe whose humanitarian consequences persist long after regime change in 2024. Iraq's 2019 Tishreen movement, a mass youth uprising against corruption, unemployment, and foreign domination, encountered lethal repression after foreign intelligence penetration, including Israeli and American operations, contaminated its political space and supplied the state with a pretext for securitized suppression. Yemen's internal conflict became the foundation of an externally driven war in which Israeli and Western intelligence coordination with Saudi and Emirati forces transformed domestic fracture into mass displacement, systemic hunger, and new 2025 escalations blocking any political settlement. Lebanon's economic collapse, compounded by the 2023-2024 war with Israel, now undergoes steady reshaping through near daily Israeli strikes, American-backed disarmament demands, and sustained Israeli intelligence activity, suffocating what remains of domestic political space. Across each case, the same mechanism governs the outcome. Authentic popular movements collide with external intelligence agendas that penetrate protest space, contaminate legitimacy, and convert civic mobilization into geopolitical theater. Mossad's public incitement in Iran renders visible a system that ordinarily operates behind the curtain. And of course, it's a system that we've been documenting for many years here at Radio Albion. Every time we hear of these violent revolutions, violent protests, whether they're in Kazakhstan or Ukraine or Georgia, there's always this hidden hand behind it. And people talk about Soros being behind a lot of these things and these Soros-backed revolutions. But the revolution in Ukraine, that wasn't Soros-backed, that was American-backed. You know, it's a playbook that isn't unique to America, isn't unique to Soros. It's something that these countries and these intelligence agencies, that they do. And you just sort of wonder who it would be that Russia would be backing in Britain. We know that over there in Russia, we or the West were backing Navalny, and Navalny was a white supremacist. He's a neo-Nazi over in Russia, and yet the America and the West were backing him, the same as they've backed these Nazi militias in Ukraine. And you just wonder, like, who Russia is going to back over here. If you have protests, you've got to be very, very careful that you don't get co-opted by these foreign intelligence agencies, especially now, because what they're saying here is what we'll do is we'll just throw you under the bus anyway. We might invest in your movement. We might get some NGOs to support you. And then once you're protesting, we'll start firing at people at random. And then we'll tell the world that our intelligence agency is actually behind your protest. I mean, I think that's the lesson to learn from this. Do not accept any foreign involvement in any protest movements. Matt, what are your final thoughts on today's topic?
Well, remember, I've studied Navalny back a few years ago in depth, and I don't believe he was a white supremacist of any kind. And I disagree with these militias. Many of them are, you know, being ordered around by Jews. and many of them trained in Israel. So, and they're all gone now anyway, so it doesn't matter. I disagree when Putin refers to them as neo-Nazi institutions. Not that it matters anymore. But remember, the Tishrin movement, you know, Iraq, that was created by the U.S. That's the American-owned, America's government there, telling them to get the hell out. And it was, of course, with they refused. Same thing for, there's, I think, another, 500 troops left in Afghanistan that they refuse to leave. They can't handle the fact that they've lost. Now Yemen is very different though, because it's close, you know, Saudi Arabia is very close by and there was an actual hot war there. Lebanon, you did have an Israeli terror invasion, and I've called it that. It really didn't have any other purpose than because they mostly attacked UN centers. I dealt with that. I think that was when you were maybe a year ago, a little less than a year ago. They didn't, you know, Hezbollah didn't lose. They burned down. The Israelis destroyed UN institutions all throughout that area. Lebanon has its own set of problems. But again, in Syria, in 2011, pro-government demonstrations were far, far larger than the anti-government ones. And actually, we talked about that a long time ago. So, I mean, some of these comparisons work. Some of them really don't. So of course you're going to have reason for protests. You have reason for protests in the U.S., in Britain, anywhere. I don't think the censorship is nearly as bad as it is in the EU. Certainly not in Iran. But his broader point still works. It follows the same pattern. Again, the big issue is why in heaven's name is anyone going to listen to the Jerusalem Post or Mossad? Unless this is just a test, they're seeing how far they can go. You know, the so-called revelation of the method. We're going to admit now that we've all been right. The guys at Radio Albion were all right. Everyone was, those guys were right. It was all, you know, foreign, make-believe. External, artificial stuff that killed, you know, millions of people. And now we're going to admit it. Now we're going to put it on Twitter, of all places. But also, you know, the important thing to keep in mind is that Israel functions also by economic calculation. It needs countries around it to be impoverished. Now, I have a paper... we haven't. I don't know if we've discussed it or not on why the UAE, Abu Dhabi, and some of these cities have suddenly become very fashionable in Jewish circles, and therefore in the American media, you hear about it all over the place. The name of the city escapes me. The one that everyone talks about. Not Dubai. You know, why suddenly that's become this trendy place? You know, so long as they can penetrate a country that way economically, you know, it's okay. They're not going to get into any trouble. And the Saudis, though, are still on the fence about this. As the genocide in not just Gaza in the West Bank, and even to some extent the Golan Heights, continues. This is a shame of the Arab world. The only country that's really standing up here is Iran. I permanently lost my Facebook account for a bunch of reasons, but partially because I had an I Stand With Iran cover page. You know, and I still do. They're right. But remember, Iran, first world, with very, very powerful friends, more powerful than the U.S. The U.S. is so overstretched and broke Most of its military are not combat ready right now. It relies on its special forces. It's been defeated in most of its, actually all of its interventions over the last 20, 30 years. Somalia, the lowest IQ in all of Africa, and they couldn't win there. I understand his point, but I think it's overstated. Yes, Israel's concerned to create military problems, but that's also primarily to destroy the economies of the area. Emirati forces, yeah, they're good. The Jews are resettling, by the way, in Dubai in huge numbers. That's how you know Israel's in serious trouble, far more trouble than Iran is right now. Jewish billionaires and millionaires have moved to Dubai. Millions have left the country. So a lot of this is projection on the Israeli side. And that's why suddenly Dubai has become this trendy place where you have a surf population. Only 11% of UAE population are citizens. They get everything for free. The rest are not. They have to work and they do all the work, and the rest, you know, are these very wealthy sheikhs that we all know about. So only 11% really enjoy the oil wealth. They have to worry about that as well. And the Jews love that kind of situation. So again, this can blow back in their face at any moment, but the U.S. just doesn't have the ability for a straight on war of attrition with anybody.
Well, it does seem as if these troubles seem to be simmering down a little bit over there in Iran at the moment, or at least it seems to have dropped out of the main news. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.